with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Late than never, I trust. Sorry about that. A couple of things had to be attended to right as the top of the hour was rolling by. All better now. This is The Horn, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, your home for a little something we like to call conversation radio, in which you are welcome to participate. Our home is HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's where the Listen Live button is. That's where the PayPal button is. We're trying to raise $285 this evening because we raised, with two people's help, $15 last night. Well, between last night and today, for which we are most grateful, sincerely. So, 28 people, 10 bucks apiece. Yeah. 10 people, 28. 14 at 20. 20 and 14. It all helps, and there are bills that are waiting even as we speak to be paid. Texas Betsy is in the Texas Senate chamber. She's been tweeting and blogging intermittently all day long. And, of course, you know that you can get... Hi, Betsy. You can get... various and sundry apps for listening on your smart device. Our preferred ones are, first and foremost, TuneIn, and secondly, the Stitcher Internet Radio app. Thanks to both of them for carrying the program. Podcast address is at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can also get the podcast over to iTunes. Okay, so hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. How do you even start this? I find it difficult to start the conversation this evening regarding what happened to the Voting Rights Act today. I mean, it was taken outside and cudgeled to death by a bunch of privileged, bigoted, sick, old white people. Well, and one who just wishes he was white. Clarence Thomas's case of white envy is profound, to say the least. Yeah, the Voting Rights Act took it on the chin today. And that means that Americans took it on the chin today. God. I asked earlier by email, I asked a friend of mine who is quite active in the ongoing struggle for civil rights, which is the ongoing struggle for essential human rights, his thoughts about it. Ron White, who is the interim director for the Southern Partners Fund, wrote back, said, I read the full dismaying news about Section 4 being eliminated and thus sterilizing, castrating, the impact of Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. As somebody has already noted, there's probably been no time since the 1960s, or I would add the post-Reconstruction 1870s, yeah, that's there, when a Congress and the country could be less equipped to designate new areas to fall under the justice's special scrutiny for voting fairness. I also know that jurisdictions under Title V restrictions around the South have been waiting for this day and are already locked and loaded with voting suppression mischief on the local level. It's true. It's true. Texas is going ahead. Florida's already announced it's going ahead with some nice voter suppression scams. Ron continues, this is an enormous blow to civil rights in this country. We need a couple of new Supreme Court justices who understand the meaning of the word justice, and we need them now. In any other political climate, this would be a huge opportunity for Congress to revisit our electoral laws, standardize them, and remap the geography of voting discrimination, which really does need updating. I just don't get why the Supreme Court, while feeling miffed that the Congress hadn't taken this step so far, even in the face of SCOTUS's continual prodding, sees justice in throwing all the districts out of Section 4 rather than demanding that others be added. If there's a silver lining, and seriously, I don't think there is, it's that Section 5 stands, it yet remains, and if new data can remap Section 4, then we may be back on track and better than ever. Do I have that much faith in America? Nope. Democracy, yes, but that means this had better be a wake-up call for every community organization in America. We need to join forces and push for comprehensive electoral reform and, along the way, better Supreme Court justices. True on all counts. Ron closed by saying U.S. society is either on a backward slide on race or this is the last gasp of dying mentalities. I agree, only our activism will determine a future we can feel proud of telling our kids and grandkids about. And that is an extremely reasonable analysis of an extremely dire and trying situation. I assume most of us did see it coming. You never know exactly what shape the perfidy of the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, the stark hatefulness, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Roberts, and Kennedy, you never know what shape it will take. In this case, instead of doing what they really wanted to do, they took a sort of jujitsu approach, and they cut out the one thing that enabled Section 5, and that was Section 4. I did, yes, really, no kidding, go and read the opinion. It gave me Excedrin headache number, Avogadro's number, plus 762,314. It's ugly. It was made uglier as I was watching the coverage on MSNBC when they found some sorry-ass old Republican member of the Alabama State Legislature, a fellow by the name of McClendon, who declared, and I am not overstating the accent here. They welcomed him on air on MSNBC, and he said, "It's a glorious day for Alabama." It was the same sort of accent that once declared, "Segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation forever." Meanwhile, and the goddess of irony does not mess around in situations such as this. Dr. John told me that this is actually the anniversary week. The anniversary week of the murders of individuals by the name of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner. Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner were Freedom Summer workers. In Mississippi. They were murdered by the Klan for trying to secure essential civil and human rights in Mississippi for people who were being denied them. Round about 22 June 1964. Do you suppose Chief Justice Roger Tawney Roberts, he's no longer Chief Justice John Roberts to me, he is now Chief Justice Roger Tawney Roberts, Roger Tawney being the Chief Justice who authored the Dred Scott decision, you may recall. Chief Justice Roger Tawney Roberts, would he be so sick, so vicious, so full of malevolent hate that he would choose to mark the anniversary of the murder of three Freedom Summer workers by issuing this pernicious, pus-filled bag of venom that goes as a Supreme Court opinion? Yes, he would. Because he, too, is a pus-filled bag of hate. His previous career over at the Department of Justice included numerous occasions in which he inveighed strenuously against the Voting Rights Act. And we all know, this isn't Wednesday, but we all know that I was dipped by the heel in my Baptist upbringing. That means I know me a few Bible verses. And in this case, I got to thinking about Genesis chapter 4, verse 8. And Cain talked with Abel his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. Verse 9, and the Lord said to Cain, and God said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? And Cain said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And God said, what hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. Genesis chapter 4, verse 10. What hast thou done? Voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And we need to understand, or at least I understand it this way. And before everybody, oh, God damn, you're going to read some Bible. Shit. Before everybody goes running away, understand that this kind of stuff, like any other mythology, can be useful. The whole Cain and Abel story is a myth about the transition from a hunter-gatherer society to a sedentary agricultural society. You might recall Abel brought offerings to the altar of God, you know, burnt offerings, live animals, you know, killed them right there where God could see him because, you know, God's a little bloodthirsty, you know. Set fire to them, and they caused a pretty smell in the nostrils of the Almighty. Cain, on the other hand, had taken to a little gardening. And he brought a basket of parsnips and carrots and a little leaf lettuce and maybe, well, it wouldn't be no bell peppers. That's one of them pre-Columbian, that's one of them Colombian. Yeah. So he brought some carrots and some parsnips, maybe a little parsley. Didn't bring any potatoes because they hadn't, no potatoes, no corn, no peppers of any sort, no beans. I brought some turnips, maybe some lentils. And he laid them there on the altar and said, "Have a snack, God." And God said, "You know, this is not pleasing to me, as I prefer the blood-soaked smell of burning flesh in my nostrils. And this just smells like the manure you done fertilized them with." And that's what got Cain so head up that he went and, well, he killed his brother, Abel. Over an issue that he had with his imaginary friend. And God said, "What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." There's a lot of ground crying today. Or there's a lot of cries coming from the ground, from the blood that's soaked into it. There is a cry that rises up from an earthen dam in Neshoba County, Mississippi. The improvised graves of Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner. There are cries of blood that rise up from Dallas County, Alabama, and Selma. The blood cries out from the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. And cries out from 1,000 other places. It cries out from trees that yet live, from which were strung that which has been called strange fruit. The blood cries out from the ground, and John Roger Tawney Roberts and Clarence Thomas and Sammy Alito and Anthony Kennedy. And Fat Tony Scalia gathered together today and welled up as good a gob as they could get and spit it on that blood that cries out from the ground. And you will never convince me, even should you try, and I doubt you will. You will never convince me that in that prattling nonsense in John Roger Tawney Roberts' opinion about how the Congress is free to fix this, that they didn't know damned good and well that ain't nothing going to get fixed. If they had actually thought it was going to be fixed, they would have left it alone, recognizing that it had been addressed in 2006 by, among other things, a 98-0 vote of the Senate of the United States that included no less than Alabama Senators Richard Shelby and, yes, even Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. The Supreme Court, I walk by it almost every day when I'm in Washington, D.C. And I can assure you that it does not have a great and impenetrable dome surrounding its perimeters. It is not as though the rats led by Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts don't know what a miserable state of affairs obtains in the Congress. They know of it, and they approve of it. They approve of every last godforsaken thing that's going on in those houses of horror. So when they write about what Congress can or cannot do, well, I imagine Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts giggled a little bit as he dictated that. Because the Congress of the United States is not even capable of tying its shoes right now, let alone restoring the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Moments like today remind us that while we may get worked up about things like Eddie Snowden or Paula Deen, that there is a real threat to this country. And that threat was embodied today by the Supreme Court of the United States, in a majority led by Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts. A cloud of obfuscation, skullduggery, and chicanery will descend across this country as a result of this pernicious decision. And to be sure, it won't just descend on the states of the old Confederacy, because we are, as I have noted, in the midst of a cold civil war in which the boundaries have been erased, and it is taking place in virtually every state in one form or another. It will happen in Arizona. It will happen in Pennsylvania. It will happen in Michigan. And yes, it'll happen in Alabama and Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi and Florida and Louisiana and North and South Carolina, in Kentucky and Tennessee and Missouri, in Oklahoma and Texas. It'll happen there, but it will happen in other places as well, your Kansases, your Idahos, maybe your Dakotas. Utah? Well, all you got to do is give them a glimpse of your magic underwear and you can vote. No one anywhere is safe. SCOTUS blog is where I went to read the opinion in question. That seemed that was the easiest way to get at it. But between this and the shenanigans going on in Texas, where a lone member of the Texas Senate has taken it upon herself to filibuster today to try to protect the fundamental human rights of every woman in that state and the men and other women who love them. Good God. We know from these stories, from these horrors, that this nation is in real jeopardy. I'm sure the teabaggers are crowing. God knows, representing McClelland. Is that his name? No, McClendon. Representing McClendon down in Shelby County, Alabama. He's probably still celebrating that glorious day. K. Mark Hoover over on the Twitter heard McClendon's comments as well. He dropped me a note and said, God, I just heard that too. You know he was sitting in his Confederate flag underwear and rubbed one out when the ruling came down. Not the prettiest of images, but yeah, I do know that. And there's a whole bunch of Confederate underwear rubbing going on all night long. They may be partying in, they may be, maybe, hell, they may do the Virginia Reel or something. I think I've mentioned before that as I grew up, every now and then you'd run across one of these unreconstructed pricks, and they'd say something like, South's gonna rise again! And rational people looked at them and said, you know what? These people are nuts. There's no way that they could raise an army. And what are they talking about? Well, now we know. They did. They wised up, these Confederates. And instead of taking artillery to Fort Sumter, well, they've decided to just take a meat axe to the Constitution. What 15th Amendment? And the rationale for striking down Section 4? Well, goodness me, all kinds of colored people is voting all over the place. Y'all don't need that no more. Right. Bless her heart. Justice Ginsburg, in about as strong a language as any Supreme Court justice is likely ever to use, about blistered the hide off of the majority. She did something rather unheard of today. She insisted upon the right to read her scathing dissent in this case, from the bench. Yeah, you know, because usually there's a certain amount of collegiality that takes place where, you know, they say, okay, here's the majority opinion, and the dissenter says, well, I filed my dissent. But this time, no, she made Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts sit there and listen to her. And it just drove him nuts. Slappy Thomas didn't care much for it, and I'm sure that Fat Tony Scalia, whose daddy was the leader of the pro-Mussolini movement in the United States. Didn't care much for it either. But it was Tony Bad Breath. Or Sammy Bad Breath. Sammy Alito. That sat there squirming and fidgeting like a 4-year-old in Sunday meeting. He squirmed and he fidgeted under her scathing remonstrance. And he rolled his eyes. You know, those women with their women thinking. Makes you wonder what else these pricks, these stark rats, are willing to do to us. Well, congratulations. We find out tomorrow. Because that's when the Prop Hate ruling is going to come down, and the DOMA ruling, most likely. It'll be a busy couple of days. I wouldn't trust this crowd with the carcass of a 3 days gone skunk. Plucked off the road in the middle of a hot, hot summer. No, I wouldn't. But they've said what they've said, the rats. And now the question falls to us. What do we do about it? Well, got an email here from one organization asking me to join in pushing for a constitutional amendment that guarantees the right to vote regardless of race. Okay. We will get that amendment out of this Congress when the pterodactyls return to Capistrano. There is no replacement. No replacement for feet on the street. Is this the moment when our country will figure that out? Can we tear ourselves away from Dancing with a Millionaire or America's Got Scabies or some reality show about people who have too many baseball cards? Can we do that? Because this is it. The rubber has met the road. We are either going to go backwards into a miserable past, or we will drag these freaks into the future. No middle ground. You hear me, Agent Fred? Good. You know, it wouldn't kill you, Agent Fred, to pony up a little contribution once in a while. We're in a $285 hole here. Sure, sure. Why the hell not? I'll sign the petition. Let's see what the petition says. Now that the Supreme Court has struck down key protections of the Voting Rights Act, yada, 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 I support an amendment that guarantees the freedom to vote for all. I guess that's the petition. Wait a minute. I think there's already something in the Constitution about that. Let me just check. Well, damn it, I want the actual text. I don't want what somebody says about the text. There it is. It's really pretty short. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Section 2. The Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Like, you know, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The 15th Amendment seems pretty clear. I don't know what another amendment would do or say that doesn't. Because every time you add to the list, you know, if you come up with a list that says A, B, C, D, and E, the people who are terrified of people voting, you know, the wrong people voting, will come up with F and say, you didn't say anything about F or 12. You know what I mean? The 15th Amendment was adopted by the United States on February the 26th, 1869. It's interesting in that, as Wikipedia notes, Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner abstained from voting on the amendment because, and he turned out to be rather prescient, didn't he? The 15th Amendment, as written, did not prohibit devices which states might use to restrict black suffrage, such as literacy tests and poll taxes. Over in the House, the vote was 144 to 44, with 35 not voting. By the way, just because this is rather instructive, there were 28 states that ratified the amendment within a year of its passage. States like Illinois and Louisiana, even Michigan. West Virginia was the second state to ratify. March 3rd, 1869. Hell, Alabama even ratified on November 16th, 1869. Mississippi ratified on January 17th, 1870. Delaware didn't get around to it till February 12th, 1901. Oregon couldn't be bothered until February 24th, 1959. California ratified on April 3rd, 1962. Maryland ratified on May the 7th, 1973. Kentucky ratified on March 18th, 1976. And Tennessee ratified on April 8th, 1997. I don't reckon the rats saw that list, did they? Because, you see, the reason Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana and South Carolina and Arkansas and North Carolina and Virginia all ratified this amendment is because they were at the time under Reconstruction, and it was ratified by a Reconstruction legislature. It was ratified by legislatures, which to this day in the Confederacy are referred to as carpetbaggers. Damn Yankees that come down here to tell us what our business is. But, insofar as it was inconvenient to their narrative, well, Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts couldn't really be bothered to pay that sort of thing any mind. No, it's all about the fact that, well, there's more black voters now than there ever have been. Funny thing about populations, they tend to increase and not decrease in the absence of something like plague or famine or open warfare. But looky here. We got more black voters. Who needs the Voting Rights Act? Oblivious. Oblivious to the people who stood for hours in the late autumn heat of South Florida, oblivious. This one's mighty hard to stomach. And with all due respect to the people who want to have a constitutional amendment that might pass sometime when their grandchildren are grown, there's really only one answer to this, and it involves Americans, freedom-loving Americans, getting out of their seats and into the streets. This is one of those moments that really needs about a million human beings surrounding the Supreme Court of the United States, the Capitol of the United States, and all the House and Senate office buildings, and not leaving at all. This is the Occupy this country so desperately needs. Yeah. Yeah. A peaceful, nonviolent, demonstration of the will of the people. We, the people. Andy writing in, Mr. Bob, remember when that MF-er John Roberts, we're calling him Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts now, was just going to call balls and strikes? Remember when he said that in his confirmation hearing? Balls and strikes? I'd say what we saw today was a bean ball that was called down the middle when it took the batter out in the head. Yeah, I remember that. Thank those weak-kneed Democrats, says Andy. Senator Byrd was the last to permit Justice Sammy the Fish Alito to get on the court. I don't know that he was the last, but I remember when he made that statement about how he'd gotten letters from people with coffee cup stains and donut sugar on them saying as how we needed a godly man who stood up for the Bible on the court, and he believed that Samuel Alito would interpret the Constitution fairly. Oh, I remember that. It will prove to be one of the darkest days of Robert Byrd's entire career. And it will not be forgotten. Andy asks, wasn't Senator Feinstein another one of those fine Democrats to let Justice Sammy on the court? Yeah. Andy closes, noting, we are so effed. And effed we will be, Andy, if we sit here and take it. I hope to God, or something, that plans are being made to put those million people in Washington, D.C. But for the love of all that matters, please understand it is not enough to come in whatever numbers and do some street theater on Saturday and be gone by Sunday. This is a defining moment. This is that moment when the things that ordinarily keep us in our chairs, in our homes, bound as if by shackles to the cable, to the TV, to Dancing with Millionaires and gooey-voiced Southern lady cooks who throw around the N-word right casually and tell stories about how they took glee in popping the blisters on the arms of a black child when they were little. This is the moment when the fact that we have jobs and mortgages and insurance payments, all those things that shackle us into servility, this is the moment when we say it really doesn't matter anymore. This is the moment when you get up and you go. It's no longer lead, follow, or get out of the way. It's lead or follow. This is a crossroads moment. I hope we will have the common decency, white folks, to listen and to be willing to follow the leads of those who are most at risk in this. I hope we will listen to the Hispanics and black folks and people of color. Listen to women. Listen to Asians. Because we really kind of need to have that moment of acknowledgement in this. Dr. John, writing, remember those 1870s ratifications occurred in the South in large part because of congressional reconstruction, when black legislators were elected because federal troops stopped voter suppression, i.e. because the U.S. needed to intervene in certain places. Then and now. Luta writes in, and he says, June 25th, 1876. It is out of subject, but as one of your native listeners, hopefully you will enlighten us about the anniversary of Custer's ass-whooping at the Little Bighorn. As a Lakota, it is a big day for us. great show today. Thank you, Luta, so, so very much for that reminder. Because it isn't off topic. It is smack dab in the middle of the topic. A nation so wrapped up in its own hubris that it feels comfortable going out to eliminate its so-called enemies. Luta, wasn't it, were they not Lakota people who were hanged after an uprising in Minnesota a few years before? Even before the assassination of Lincoln, I believe. The diminution of rights of one constitutes a diminution of the rights of all. Of course, the oppressive minority, you know, us white folks, we're going to be a minority real soon, if we aren't already. We don't hesitate, some of us. It's a glorious day for Alabama! To revel in our accession to rights at the cost of others. What Luta refers to, the comeuppance that George Armstrong Custer so richly deserved, came as a result of a policy that made the same findings essentially about the native peoples of this continent that had been made, well, that had been made about other persons of color. That they were not fully human, and that white folks could do with them as they pleased. Colonel John Chivington at, what was it, Sand Creek in Colorado comes to mind? When asked whether or not the women and children should be spared, Native women and children, he, clothed in the mantle of his white privilege, said, "Kill them all. Nits make lice." We are faced with a defining moment. The nice thing, if there's such a thing in this discussion, is that we get to define that moment. We get to do the defining. If it was possible, those millions should be in Washington by tomorrow. Marty pointing out, and the Supremes have banned the public gathering to protest on their grounds. So much for the First Amendment. Yeah, that's a great catch, that catch 22. It's the best there is. We have a First Amendment, but they get to define what it is, what it means. Well, there may just be some pushback. There may just. So as the saying goes, thank you, Luta, in Mankato, Minnesota. That's where the hangings were. Yeah, there's a whole lot of, and I think it comes from Ecclesiastes, there's a whole lot of there is nothing new under the sun about today. And that's all right, because it is a day for remembering. It is a day for paying the closest of attention. It is a day for listening sharp and hard, that we may hear that blood cry out from the earth to which those hateful old men were so deaf. To us it is charged that we make the cries of that blood in the ground audible to Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts, to Justice Roger Taney Scalia, to Justice Roger Taney Alito, to Justice Roger Taney Kennedy, to Justice Roger Taney Thomas. Luther reminds me that there was another case that came down today. A little girl in South Carolina stand. Well, her daddy had to go off and fight George Bush's war in the Iraq. And when he came back, she was gone. She had been taken away. And she had been placed with an adoptive family. He struggled to get his daughter back. And he finally made a claim under the Indian Child Welfare Act, because the blood of First Peoples runs in the child's veins. Cherokee blood, to be particular. And lo and behold, the court in South Carolina got it right. And they gave custody of the little girl to her daddy. And today, the Supreme Court took her away from her father, claiming that he was abusing the Indian Child Welfare Act. I don't just throw Roger Taney around for the hell of it. These fellas, well, the shoe fits. Thank you for reminding me of that, Luda. So much to think about, much to remember this evening. We'll take our, here endeth the filibobster. We'll take a break. We're an hour into the program and we are still where we started, $285 away from, keeping the bills paid. Hopefully that will remedy in time. If you're on hold, please stay there. Lines are open, though, 304-658-3333. And the Skype line is open, Bob Kincaid Horn. Take a break and get the conversation started when we get back. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is on the deer. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a cord that Peter sold after story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your rights. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Six past the hour. Kind of couldn't resist playing that. Seemed appropriate at the time. This is the Horn, and let us not shilly-shally about. Let us go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Or not. Okay, well, if they want to get in, they'll try that. I waited all day. Where did that slip come from? I waited all day for showtime to come around, but I recognized at the same time that like my friend Ron, I was rendered near speechless. And again, not because I didn't see it coming, but because it is still shocking when it actually arrives. It is shocking to the senses to see such ancient evils resurrected and trotted out proudly, no less, for all to see. And all you can do is one of two things. You can hope someone else will act, or you can act yourself. Pretty narrow scope, isn't it? All right, let's try the phones again. Hey, welcome to the program. Wonder if there are phone problems here. Hey, welcome to the phone. Can't talk. Welcome to the program.
Am I on?
You are, Edward. How are you?
For heaven's sake. Well, I was extremely upset with the Supreme Court today, and I would just like to tell the rat something that Nina Simone said to Mississippi years ago. Rats, goddamn.
There you go.
There you go. And I want to tell all the young people within your audio radiance to hit the streets, because the fascists aren't coming, they're already here.
Bingo.
Well, anyway, I got a letter from my friend and friends in North Carolina. He's a retired psychologist, and he and his wife have set up a humanist association there. They're doing real well, but they live up there close to Chapel Hill and Duke and up in that area. And so anyway, but... he sent me a letter, and I'll read it, but I'm not going to read the newspaper article.
Okay.
It says, "Esteemed sirs, please review the enclosed newspaper article, which suggests that North Carolina may be exceeding even Texas in the race to the 19th century. Much of the proposed and or past legislation seems inappropriate, but North Carolina voters elected conservative Republicans to the supermajorities in the North Carolina's House and Senate, as well as electing a conservative Republican governor. Conservative Republicans are therefore entitled to pass whatever legislation they deem appropriate, even though some of it seems exceedingly strange."
Understatement.
Well, he's a psychologist, you know.
Right. They don't do vitriol just a whole lot, do they?
No. But, we've known each other forever. He and his wife, in a few months, are celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. So,
wow.
They've been around for a while, and so have I. My partner and I are celebrating our 39th.
My goodness gracious.
And we haven't killed each other yet. Isn't that amazing?
Well, and in Dallas, nobody's killed you. I mean,
ain't that the truth? Well, you know, we have good friends, and we don't go to places where people shoot you up very much. Maybe Whole Foods, they'd probably do it. Yeah, maybe we ought to stay away from Whole Foods.
Yeah.
We have another big grocery store that has everything you ever want. It's called Central Market. And it's just wonderful. You can find anything you want to eat in that place.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Walking through there and then their deli section, it smells so good. Mm-mm. And here I am.
I got to know, what's the name of the grocery store for other inhabitants of the area?
It's called Central Market.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
I've heard of that, in fact.
and it's big, and boy, do they have everything. They have their cheese section, if you like cheese, is immense. They have every cheese known to mankind.
Goodness gracious. I'd probably go broke just trying to walk in the front door.
Well, these friends of ours, Mike and Louisa, they went when it first opened, and Louisa said, we went absolutely crazy. She said, when we went out of the front door, our bill was $200.
That's the way, yeah, that's the way it goes at a nice grocery like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You just get carried away. And don't ever go to a grocery store
hungry.
When you're hungry. Mm-mm. That's the bad time to go.
No, that's when you come out with the, looky here. They've got canned hummingbird tongues. Son of a gun.
How about it?
That'd hit the spot.
Well, I tell you, I was so upset with that damn Supreme Court. And, as Nina Simone said about Mississippi, I say, rats, goddamn.
Give them hell, Edward. You have a good night.
Well, you do too.
All right.
Bye.
Bye now. Our good friend Edward calling from Dallas. Yeah, that's a nice Nina Simone reference. Very nice. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's John. How you doing?
John, how are you?
All right. Well, I'm pissed about this this Supreme Court thing, and I need you to help me with something here.
If I can.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I'm not in much better shape, John. I don't know that I am in better shape.
Yeah. No. It's really more just understanding. I mean, something basically. I'm missing something. Three separate co-equal branches of government. Right. That's the phrase. Why is there no deference to Congress on the part of the Supreme Court? Because Congress has reauthorized all of the Voting Rights Act, or just those sections, I mean, several times, and they've revised and updated as Congress saw fit. Why can the Supreme Court come in now and say, you need to do this? The Supreme Court doesn't legislate. This is where I'm missing something important here.
Well, no, you're not. You're fine and dandy, John. And in fact, there are rules of construction that they start teaching almost from day one in law school. They're called rules of construction, and it doesn't mean how you build something. It means how something is to be construed. And one of the primary ones is that legislatures are to be afforded great deference in scrutinizing the constitutionality of a piece of legislation.
Right.
For instance, there are numerous instances in the history of the Supreme Court where they've said Congress knew what it was doing and Congress has the power to do XYZ if they want to blah, blah, blah. And the fact of the matter is, what happens is when you've got an ideologue court like this, they will, and I think this is a little bit of what Andy was getting at a few minutes ago when he was talking about how Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts in his confirmation hearing said he was just going to call balls and strikes.
Right.
Well, he was saying that he would just sit there and make determinations of whether the law was right or wrong, which is kind of what they're supposed to do.
Pay attention to things like rules of construction, as you're saying, for instance.
Right. And the other, there are two prongs. One of them is rules of construction, the deference that a court should afford according to its own rules, acts of the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's, if I recall correctly, I haven't even been in these books for a very long time. Usually it's phrased like, for instance, the legislature must be plainly wrong or clearly wrong. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found out is that the two prongs are things like deference of the judiciary toward the legislature, and the other prong is stare decisis, pronounced
right.
by some as stare decisis.
Mm-hmm.
And stare decisis says that there should be a body of law. That if there is a body of law, a body of decisional law that speaks to the issue, that the court should, to the extent practicable, and again, with great deference, adhere to that body of law. Now, sometimes you have to depart from that, because if stare decisis was the only operative principle, then, for instance, Plessy versus Ferguson would still be the law of the land, and separate but equal would obtain. But we do recognize from time to time that that other courts just got it dead wrong. For instance, sometime in the future, if there ever is a sane Supreme Court, they may look at Bush v. Gore and say, this was decided just plain wrong, and depart from stare decisis that way. But in this case, you've got exactly what you noted. Years of reauthorization up to 2006, when it was reauthorized for 25 years by a 98-0 vote of the, or 98-0 or 98-2 vote of the Senate. I think it was 98-0. Just two abstentions or two absences. And you would think that's why I'm saying you don't need any help. That should have been a sufficient answer to say, well, the legislature has spoken, and nothing is operating on an unconstitutional basis here. And some of that you will find in Justice Ginsburg's dissent.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is there were certain assumptions made in the creation of the three branches by the framers. And one of the assumptions that was made was that, yes, you will have bad government sometimes. But it will be a bad government occasioned by good faith differences of opinion. They did not contemplate that outright brutal ideology in bad faith would become an operative principle of this government. And that is, in fact, what has happened.
They didn't expect the branches to be filled with a bunch of monkey wrenchers, basically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did. And you know, John Marshall never saw the court as being this thing that would deliberately put a stick in somebody's spokes just to watch the wreck happen, which is what was done today. Now, Dr. Bill has pointed out that John Marshall has flaws that most people don't even notice, like the fact that he was basically the progenitor of the idea of corporate personhood because he was busy making America safe for corporations way back in the early 19th century. But deliberately trying to wreck the thing just to watch the pieces tumble, that wasn't him. And it wasn't most of them. But from time to time, the court has gone completely sideways. The Taney Court in the Dred Scott decision is one of those moments. The Lochner Court, for which the libertarians and Ayn Randians and Republicans and John Birchers and teabaggers all just generally swoon. And the Lochner Court was the one that said that it was unconstitutional for the state to impose working hours on an industry.
Mm-hmm.
The Lochner Court is one of those nasty, dark moments in our history. The Plessy Court, and they kind of overlap. And then you come forward, and with when Berger dies, and he was no picnic, but when Berger dies and Rehnquist becomes Chief Justice, and then with the arrival of Scalia and Kennedy, and George H.W.'s own affirmative action appointment, Clarence Thomas. Well, they were pretty close to gone, and now they have simply left the building. Roberts and Alito were the last critical pieces of the puzzle. I mean, there's you see pictures of Justice Ginsburg, and bless her heart, she is hanging on tooth and toenail. Because she knows that if she was to resign, the woman has battled pancreatic cancer.
Right.
But she knows that if she resigns, whomever is appointed to replace her will never be confirmed. And so she's just, she is literally in it. It's at this point, I would say, in Justice Ginsburg's career, it's not even a lifetime appointment. It's a life sentence. But these guys were picked. I'm noticing a comment from Larry in the chat room. Rehnquist made his bones in voter suppression. Well, these people were picked by these right-wing presidents for a reason. And usually all the noise was made about abortion. While the fact that people like Rehnquist, and in this case Roberts, really made their bones in voter suppression, well, that's why they're there, John. That's why they're there. This is the moment. Citizens United wasn't the moment. This is the moment for which these men were chosen.
Well, now let me ask you. My understanding is that they didn't. This is not a final. They could have gone so far to shut the books, but they didn't by striking down just part of it. So now it goes back to Congress for a potential reauthorization or change. Is that correct?
That is correct. But it's also a piece of misdirection, John.
Mm-hmm.
Because Section 5 was at risk. They
right.
could have outright struck down Section 5. But they also recognized, because John Roberts, while being a, pick a pejorative.
Yeah.
I'll take horse's ass for 500, Alex.
Yeah.
While being that, he's not a dummy. And by the time you get to be Chief Justice, vanity has, if integrity has left the building for this bunch, vanity has come in with a full court.
Mm-hmm.
And so he doesn't want to be Roger Taney. He doesn't want to be the Lochner court outright. He just wants to accomplish those goals, but he wants to be seen as someone who could craft consensus opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not going to do what is in his heart. He's not going to just outright strike down Section 5 when he realizes, as he probably does, but he has to realize that the state of dysfunction in which the Congress finds itself makes it unlikely that that any sort of remedy will be proposed to Section 4 via their ruling.
Right.
And he probably also recognizes that given the redistricting and the voter suppression that will occur as a result of this ruling, the earliest chance for there to be a Congress that can address it is something like January 1, 2023.
Mm.
Sobering, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I mean, I guess the natural question is, you know, I thought it was, you know, you made an excellent point about, you know, this is where, you know, some outrage should be, and this is what something like, you know, there needs to be an Occupy for this. But based on what you just said, it sounds like that's kind of futile. And I hate to think about things being futile.
Well, no, it's actually the only hope, John. It's the only hope. But it is only a hope if it's done the right way. If it's the typical Washington protest where you get some street theater and people show up for one day, stand on the mall in the blazing sun, and here's some speeches made by professional speech makers, and then you're gone before the sun is down, it is futile.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that has to happen. Well, look, this is something that has to happen on the same scale as the civil rights movement that occasioned the passage of the Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that there really do need to be a million people surrounding Capitol Hill and not leaving. You know, this isn't like that goofy Koresh or whatever his name is wanting to take guns to Washington D.C. just to
mm-hmm.
No, I'm talking about a real movement of the people to go and stay.
Right, and you use the word occupy. I mean, you used,
yeah.
You said that model, and that's what I responded to when you said that, and that makes it with the goal being to say we don't leave until this Congress acts. Is that
yes?
That's what you're yeah. But it needs to be a it can't be a big X movement. It needs to be something that is inspired and directed by people who are affected. We
yes.
can't have professional white activists leading the charge.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, yeah.
And because, well, I just happen to be in a position to at least have, I think, a halfway valid opinion based upon experience
yes.
of how good the professional movement movers are at losing.
Well, they're good at fundraising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if there are any of those organizations out there, good on them if they want to dig deep and pony up some cash for the real grassroots people to get the job done. But yeah. they don't need to direct the action. And the problem that they have is they think that the money they give buys access to control. I'll go so far, John, as to say, this is also one of those moments when we will lose if we do not understand that we all have the same issue. I've said this a million times in a million different ways, but this is the moment when women's rights advocates have to understand that voting rights are their rights.
Mm-hmm.
And when environmentalists have to understand that voting rights are their rights. This is the real big tent moment.
It is. I mean, because voting is the absolute bare minimum least that you can do, you know, as a citizen, or to have your voice heard, or to affect any kind of change, marginal though it may be. So something like this, which threatens something that is enshrined in the Constitution, as you said, protection, then there's literally, it seems to me, no limit to what can suddenly be declared in bounds to invalidate your right to vote. I mean, you talked about women in voting. You know, what's to stop, this is rhetorical, I guess, what's to stop them from passing a law that says, you know, if you are found to have had an abortion, then you have lost your right to vote? I mean, is that a reasonable sort of progression?
Theoretically, no. But in application, yeah, because what today's ruling did, John, is it reduced everything to a matter of, yeah, so stop me.
Right.
And the only means that we had to stop it has just been gutted.
Right.
It is not a joke. This is the absolute truth. There is there's a voter purge and voter suppression redistricting that will take place in Texas immediately because of this ruling, and it'll take something like 800,000 people. It'll take the vote away from them.
Yeah.
But because of the faulty, flawed analysis of Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts and his pals, that doesn't matter because more black folks will still be voting.
Right.
And I think this falls more under your discipline than mine, but isn't that a failure? Isn't that a failure occasioned by quantitative analysis over qualitative?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like you said, I mean, populations rise. Of course, that's like saying, you know, there's more people now than there were right after the Civil War, and so, you know. Getting a driver's license makes your population grow. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's just demographics. Yeah.
Well, I've spent all day long, John, trying to find some way to dig some positive out of this, and I'm really grateful to my friend Ron for saying, you know, if there's a silver lining, and even he said, and I doubt there is, this will occasion the moment when we really, really get out and do it and make sure that none of this crap can ever happen again.
Right. Well, thanks. You clarified and confirmed what I was really afraid of. So I appreciate you talking this through. I'm going to get out of your way here. So thanks a lot, Bob.
Well, I appreciate it, John. You have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. All right, bye.
Bye now. Dr. John, he doesn't realize it, but maybe most of y'all don't. But sometimes it's about keeping me from running out into the yard tearing at my clothing, because, well, it's kind of been that way. I mean, it's just a great big giant what the moment. And yeah, I shed a few tears over this. When I started to think about the lives lost and the blood crying from the ground, I teared up. Because really, Chief Justice Roger Taney Roberts hocked up the biggest, stickiest loogie he could pull out of his sinus cavities. And if he had gone and spat it right on Martin Luther King's grave, it wouldn't have been a damn bit of difference. Now, the problem is, you know, I say these kind of things, and in large part, y'all agree. But meanwhile, in the halls of government, nobody else says them, because they've got to have comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, comity. And comity is killing us. Or it is killing what little bit of civic freedom there is to us. The president was deeply disturbed about the ruling. The vice president was highly saddened at the ruling. The attorney general was profoundly disturbed at the ruling. And so, while they're disturbed, Sammy Alito can sit there on the bench, rolling his eyes and fidgeting and bobbing his head back and forth in absolute, utter, complete, and total disrespect for Justice Ginsburg. But they all go home at the end of the day, and they find out whether they're having filet of Dover sole or lobster. And while we all, you know, may be deeply disturbed, well, the sun will come up tomorrow, won't it? Somebody has to call them out. And by me, by somebody, I don't mean me or you. We really need a representative in Washington who will do a little creative name calling. Whether he was right or wrong, you might recall that Abraham Lincoln threatened to have Roger Taney clapped in irons over the Dred Scott decision. That is the kind of language we need about this. But, you know, January will roll around, and I'm sure Roger Taney Roberts and Roger Taney Alito and Roger Taney Thomas and Roger Taney Scalia and Roger Taney Kennedy will show up at some Martin Luther King Day memorial service. And even there, no one will call them out, because we've got to be civil. We're going to civil ourselves right out of a daggum country. By the way, 23 minutes before the hour, many, many thanks to Luta, who says, I don't have much, but hopefully it helps a little bit. It helps a lot, Luta. It helps a lot. And so now we are at $275 to raise before show's end. And thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah, Andy.
Called from California.
California is the place to be. I'm going to load up the truck and head to Beverly.
Yep, you strike it rich in the oil. If you just happen to pop one of them veins.
Well, you know, hey, you know, it's not just oil anymore. Maybe we could go fracking.
Yeah, that too. Hopefully they can stall that here in this state, but doesn't look real good. Doesn't look real good. Legislature, even though it's majority Democrat, got the wrong Democrats.
Well, or got people. You know, there's Democrats and then Dinos. We forget that at our peril.
And some people, some of these Dinos, even like to refer to themselves as Republicans, which I find totally repugnant. I couldn't see anything more repugnant than calling yourself a Republican. But some of them Democrats just get off on that, and it confounds me, man. Where were you at Netroots, Bob?
No money, no go.
No money, huh? I met Rick Smith.
Did you really?
At Netroots. Yeah, he was kind enough to even help me out with getting around down there, which was nice.
Well, he's an awesome guy.
I met one of your other contributors to your show.
Tracy?
No, Brad Friedman.
Oh, you met Brad, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a pleasant experience, unfortunately.
Oh, no, I'm sorry to hear it.
Yeah. We got into, I knew I was going to get, I got into his craw when I was over by the Radio Row, and I knew he had this thing about IRV voting. Instant runoff voting?
Yeah.
Or, it's another term for it.
Well, you've kind of got that in California now, right?
In some places, yeah. In Oakland and in San Francisco, they do it. And he just hates anything that has to do with electronics and that you might have to do some tabulation that might not be, totally transparent or disclosed.
Yeah, I'm not real crazy about voting machines either, but IRV kind of relies on it, doesn't it?
No, you could do paper ballots. It's all the tabulation.
Right.
I mean, it's just a ranking that you put on a form. And it doesn't have to be an electronic form. It can be paper. So you can do it over again. But you do have to run it through, mathematics and algorithms to actually do the ranking. You know, you go through iterations of these algorithms, and as soon as somebody reaches a 50% threshold, then it stops. But it does take into consideration all the rankings to get to that 50% threshold of getting a majority of votes. But people have been doing this for a pretty long time. I mean, the mathematics isn't that tough. I just feel if you do open source, reown the code, it can be watched. You can run it multiple times. I mean, you could have different experts there. I just think it's a great system because then you don't have to do an election over again. And then you can vote your conscience. You can vote for who you want to vote for, and your second choice can be the more establishment candidate. And it's counted.
Right.
That way. So I just think it's a great, I like the system.
Well, as opposed to winner take all?
Yeah, round the post. Ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
That's the other term that's used. But anyway, Brad and I had it out on the, Nicole Sandler show, I guess it was. But it wasn't a fun experience for me because he had the mic. you know, makes a difference when you're holding on to that mic.
Well, when you've got the button, yeah, that's...
Exactly. And after a while, I just got frustrated. I go, that's enough for me. I mean, if I can't hold this mic and I can't respond to your comments, which I thought were pretty specious in that way, because he kept on going back, just like you did, to the electronic voting machines, and I kept and internet voting. I go, that's not the issue here, Jack. It's not the issue. The issue is the tabulation machine, the algorithms of doing the math. Yeah, I understand that. But it's not, you don't have to do internet mode. You don't have to use electronic machines. You can use paper. It's just an interface. I mean, you just, it's a form. It's put the rankings on. That's all. So, I've done it before at the PDA DFA meetings. That's how we did all our voting at one point because we had a really good technology guy. So for years we were doing that.
Yeah, but if I understand correctly, then I wouldn't dare speak for him. But, his concern, as you describe it, is not with the format itself, but with the with his perceived vulnerability of software of theoretically hackable software.
That should have been his focus. He should have focused on that, but he didn't. He kept on deviating and going back to the electronic machines, and that wasn't the issue, and internet voting, because that's one reason he was at the conference, because there was an internet voting panel, and he was on it or something. And it was a bad, you know, something they're doing in the legislature, and it is bad. You don't want to do that baloney. I totally agree with that. Over the internet with security, you know, all the security repercussions of that is baloney, stealing an election. So no problem there. But my answer to him is open source. No, you own the code. It's open source code. It's not, this isn't that sophisticated mathematics. I mean, probably any, second year computer science person could even write the code to do that, to do the ranked choice voting system. It's not that complicated. You don't need a PhD or a graduate degree to write the code even. So having control of the code and having it open source shouldn't be a big deal. And then, you know what it's doing. You run through it, and it's tested and tested and tested. Hey, my big thing is, in the banking and the financial world, they got that under control. You know, in ATM machines, they got that all under control. I mean, that's all tabulated. All they don't make mistakes there. And if they do have some error or something, having somebody tries to take, like the guys in, around the world tried to steal from the ATM machines. Did you see that? And they rounded those guys up pretty damn fast.
Right, because the first tenet of the legal system is to manage the money.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to money, they can figure this out anyway. You know, I was thinking, too, the other day I wrote you an email back about this surveillance state. And one thing you should take into consideration is when Bush first got nailed doing this, with the James Risen article, with Russell Tice, who came out and
the New York Times sat on it,
whistleblower
to protect the election, right?
But there were Republicans who were mouthing off. John Dean continued to mouth off about the surveillance state and the lack of, and the breach of the Constitution over that.
Before you go beyond John
Bruce
Dean.
Fine.
I have a hard time calling John Dean a Republican if by Republican we mean today's Republicans.
Oh, he's definitely had a change of heart.
I mean, he was
in the Nixon administration.
Right, and you know, he was the one who said there is a cancer on the presidency.
I don't know what he's registered now, but he was Bruce Fine, certainly still is a Republican, and he's continued to harp on that. Bob Barr is another one that comes to mind that's been big on the Constitution and trying to rein in the Patriot Act. But there were people yelling during Bush's time. This isn't just because Obama's in office, Bob. It really is.
No, but for some people it is.
Out of control.
For some people it is.
Well, those people are stupid.
Well, one of the people for whom that it is.
Stupid MF-er.
Well, for one of the people for
and
whom.
That, and I'm sorry, I'm telling that to the Horn audience. If that's the reason you think because it's just coming after Obama, then you're nuts. Because he's not in control. This is done by General Alexander, the NSA people, and this is out of control. And I don't think Obama.
How about corporate America?
Playing along.
How about corporate America? Do they have a hand in this?
I'm sure they love the police state, because in a fascist state, the corporations do very, very well.
And yet, as you and I have gone back and forth via email, Andy, this narrative, as it is being put out there, somehow is all about Barack Obama and is all about the NSA.
It is, and you have it wrong.
No, Andy, not for me.
And the way,
Andy, stop. I'd like a chance to talk here.
Guys with kahunas in the press.
Andy, this is a conversation.
You're way off on this, man.
This is a conversation. Okay, it's not a shouting match. All right. I've read as many of these articles as you have, and yet the narrative, as it is being put forward, is all about Barack Obama and the NSA.
You're wrong. You're a liar. And you, and I know you want to play this tape. Why don't you play this tape to your own?
Did you just call me a liar, Andy? Andy.
Yes, I did.
Fuck you. No more Andy. See, that's one of the beauties about internet radio. You can do that. I didn't even want to get in to the Snowden baloney tonight. But I will not be screamed at in a format in which we try to have civil conversation. Contrarywise, I will not refuse to respond when someone does insist on doing that. I potted Andy down to try to have a conversation. I potted him back up. I got called a liar. Now, I'm going to say what I had intended to say. The real story here, and by God, we just had to be dragged back into this swamp, didn't we? That right there is one of the biggest moments of disrespect for what we had to deal with today. Andy's so caught up. Bless his heart, in his meme, that he couldn't even take a day to honor the blood that has been shed, that was spat upon by the Supreme Court. Not even one day. Not even one day. But I am going to finish what he was trying to overscream me with. And that is that this narrative has, from its inception, been characterized as strictly a government issue. I would expect no less from someone whose point of view is that government is a problem, when in fact the real problem as it exists is the outsourcing and corporatization of our government. The Booz Allen Hamiltons of the world. That's the question. And it hasn't been answered because it does not fit the paradigm of the agenda of the individual who's doing the most blogging about this. Because when you get a couple of Ron Paulistas, well, they're not going to point to corporate problems. They're going to point to government, because the overarching principle is that government is bad. But the fact of the matter is, there could be no data mining if it were not for the fact that there is data there to mine. Who's got the data? Facebook has the data. Twitter has the data. Google has the data. Microsoft has the data. Yahoo has the data. Skype has the data. And on and on and on. You couldn't mine it if it wasn't there. Every bit of the programs that are being complained about within this libertarian paradigm were created in the business sector. The guy who went from Booz Allen to the Bush administration back to Booz Allen is the birth mother of the data mining program, and he did not become the birth mother of the data mining program at the NSA. He became the birth mother at Booz Allen. And there's absolutely no conflict about that. But that is not the way the issue is being presented. The issue is being presented as big bad government and police state, a concept with which I'm not completely at odds. There are police state elements here, but they operate on much more fundamental principles. Ask a mother with babe in arms who has just been tasered in the back whether she gives a good goddamn about the metadata from her email being swooped up by Booz Allen Hamilton from other corporations. As soon as she regains the power of speech, she might have an opinion. Okay? But you know what? The Constitution doesn't apply to Booz Allen Hamilton. It does to the government. And anyone who thinks that the domestic spying revelations marked that single point at which the Fourth Amendment became jeopardized, doesn't know diddly. Nothing, less than nothing, about the history of the Fourth Amendment in this country. The first thing categorized in the Fourth Amendment is the right to be secure in one's person, papers, and effects. Tell me how secure the people were in their persons when Bull Connor turned loose the dogs and turned on the fire hoses. Tell me! But that doesn't fit within the little white paradigm of civil liberties being whatever a libertarian defines them to be. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of going on and on and on about one issue and one issue only. Our myopia is killing us. Losing my temper, sorry. I should probably just turn this all off and call it quits for the evening. Because Andy showed absolutely no respect whatsoever, either for me or for you. It has been seldom the case that I've ever had to mute a member of the Horn family, commune, what have you. but I don't think I've ever called any one of you a liar. I've been getting on here for near 10 years, in excess of 10 years, actually, if we count terrestrial radio and this business. For 10 years, and we have had magnificent conversations that were predicated upon mutual respect. But I'm the liar because I won't tumble for a story promulgated by someone that I have a reasonably and good faith held position is a huckster, a con artist, a grifter. Anyone who wants to hold the position that that individual is as, well, no, I'm not going to do that. That wants to hold a position that that individual is something special is welcome to do so, and we can have a civil discussion. But there is no place in this program for the kind of conduct that Andy displayed. And frankly put, there is no place in this program for the kind of conduct that I displayed. And while Andy isn't here to apologize to you, and I would not dream of apologizing for him because I'm quite sure he feels he has nothing to apologize for, out of my abiding sense of respect and regard and admiration for this community that we have built, to you, I tender my sincere and most profound apology. Dr. John writing in. Subject line, priorities. Ask the thousands of people living in drains under Las Vegas how much of a goddamn they give about Snowden. Instead, ask them how they ended up there, and you'll hear about rent and debt and layoffs and outsourcing. There's no security in one's person or effects when your life is wrecked by financial manipulation outside your control, when a board of directors decides their profit is more important than your labor, when the privileged whine about how they're discriminated against because of their very privilege. I can't Facebook insecurity. Dr. John says, I tune out pretty quickly. Bless your heart, Kate. Kate writing in. All caps, and Kate doesn't do that. Do not go away. Take a breath. Step away from the mic. Play some music. Don't leave the Horn family with this mess. Okay, so she doesn't say play some music. She says play some Jimmy Buffett or. And I'm going to opt for or, because it's perfect, Kate. It's just perfect.
It won't work this morning. I can't punch in. It's too many questions under my skin. I did like they told me. I settled down. Now I'm going. psychic. I don't need a shrink. I need some time away from all this. I need a drink. What do I do here? Where will I go? Why am I so haunted by anything that I don't know? I need room to think this over. I need a ride out to Horseshoe Lake. I wanna feel like it makes a difference. What difference one man makes? They say that one man makes.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yes, indeedy. I have never, never, never failed. I've never played that song, and it's failed to do the magic it does. Will Kimbrough. One of those little patron saint songs called Horseshoe Lake. Comes in handy. You probably ought to own it. Thanks, Psychoticus. If you haven't already, Bob, after the show, I guess, take a bit and walk off the shakes. Confrontations like that are hell on the blood pressure. They really are. And Jay writing in, apology accepted. Thank you, Jay. And Jay even went so far as to push us down to 225 to raise for the evening. So thank you immensely. Jack said, I'm kind of with Kate on this one. And remember, you're only human, dude. Yeah, see, moments like that, though, Jack, I feel like I'm not even that. The Psychoticus also pointed out in the chat room, Bob, no one's going to begrudge you having limits to your tolerance of abhorrent behavior. If I start acting like some nutter right-winger or libertarian, please, please excoriate me to the best of your literary ability. And yet there I was, just having given the, we need to recognize, we need to be able to get out from under single-issue politics and start building the really big tent. And I get that. From Jeremy in Vermont. Subject line, NSA. Bob, no need to apologize in my direction. I still stand by my comment from a few weeks back that this NSA leak crap is more of a sleight-of-hand magic trick. Look over there while we fuck you to the wall over here. Jim with a... Yeah, that is appropriate, Jim. I'll see if we can find the moment to play this, Jim, with a damned fine request. I just have to find the right artist, and that'll take a little digging. Let's go to the phones. And I know apology accepted and everything, but I still don't like it. I don't like that in me. I have spent 20 years, more than 20 years, trying to teach my own children not to let people get their goat. And I just, well, I'm constantly telling Ferg, don't let them see your donkey ears. And I just flipped them out there to be yanked on for all they were worth. But I'm sorry. It's like something that was said in the chat room a few minutes ago. Bean in the chat room said, I don't think Bob's a lion. He'd be better paid if he was. There's big money in it. There really, really is. And I'm kind of witness to that fact by, what, reverse extrapolation? Jesus. I hate it. I hate that little bit of barbarian I've still got left in me. The phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Is that you, Sergi?
Yes, it is, Bob.
How are you?
To be honest, I got shaken up. Never heard that kind of exchange on your show before. I've been listening for almost a year.
And you're not likely to hear it again for another year or 20.
And in other news, I just realized that I've been listening for almost a year. Time really flies.
When you're having fun, it sure does.
It feels like it was yesterday that I first discovered your show, but... there's several things I want to mention. One of your earlier callers mentioned, Central Market. I have a little Central Market store, I think.
Edward, yeah. You're probably in the region where those places are available.
Oh yes, there are several in Fort Worth. I have a little amusing little Central Market story to kind of lighten the mood a little bit again. When I first discovered Central Market, there's this guy I used to know who was kind of I don't want to say a health nut. He wasn't quite, you know, like bodybuilder, you know, protein powder, da, 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 type of person, but he was fairly, conscious about, you know, quote unquote healthy eating and the like. And, you know, as all of you don't know, I'm pretty much the opposite of that. I survive off of fried chicken and Taco Bell and, you know, donut burgers with mayonnaise is as much of the stuff of Lottie. But he was going to go grocery shopping. And I was gonna, you know, I was needing to do my own shopping, and so I was like, all right, you know, what store are we gonna go to? We can both shop at the same time. Oh, he ended up taking me to Central Market. And, I don't really spend too much time around Arlington Heights, which is where the district where the one we went to was. And so, like, I'm like a fish out of water, you know, I'm a lower class black dude, and you know, Arlington Heights is your old money type, you know, white neighborhood. And I walk into this Central Market, and I turn to him, and I say, all right, put me in the difference of the 2 liters. Get what? I said, the 2 liters, the soda. And he just looked at me for about 10 or so pregnant pause seconds. Then he said, Sergi, there are no 2 liters in here. I said, oh, please take me back. I gotta have my soda. And so, Central Market doesn't quite have everything. So I have to dispute what Edward said about that. But, yeah, that was the first and only time I've ever been into a Central Market. I think I'll pass for the rest of my life.
Well, it sounds like a lovely place to go broke.
Oh yes,
I mean, I can destroy. You know, just with a house full of teenagers, you can go broke on pork and beans and canned mackerel in Kroger's. But
Oh, yes. I walked in, and those were some of the most outrageous prices that I have ever seen. I mean, you know, there's these little bitty tubs. You can barely even, it's probably more appropriate to call it a petri dish size thing of French onion dip. And I looked at the price tag under it, $5. Go to Save a Lot and get a big industrial sized tub that my friend TJ wouldn't even be able to eat, and he's a human garbage disposal. He wouldn't even be able to eat that in a week for $5 at Save a Lot. But yeah, it is a very easy way to go broke. But my main point though is about the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And I wanted to mention a little, I'm not sure if it's, I've been listening on and off before I decided to try and call in. Did you or anybody else mention Eric Cantor and what he said in reaction to it?
Oh, dear God, no. I don't know if I can take it, but let's find out.
My prediction is Eric Cantor will get primaried because he acts. He joined a lot of progressives in condemning the Supreme Court decision.
Oh, he'll get primaried by the teabaggers or something.
Yes, he's on his way to getting primaried. I can see it already because I saw this and I had to reread it several times. Eric Cantor.
But wait, stop before I get all optimistic and stuff and get my hopes dashed. Did he criticize the Supreme Court decision because of what it did, or because it didn't just go ahead and kill the whole Voting Rights Act?
No, he mentioned. I mean, I'm sure he's lying, so I'm not gonna get any. I'm not gonna get optimistic over because I'm sure he's lying about this. But you know, I don't have it up on my computer screen right now. But basically, what he said was, you know, this is wrong. You know, I spent some time with civil rights leaders, and which I'm also sure is bull. And you know, it's such. And he actually, let's see if I think I have it in one of these tabs here. But yes, Eric Cantor actually, I guess the stop clock is right twice a day. He actually joined the progressives in saying that this is a grave violation and that we should stand up for the voting rights of minorities.
So he'll be the one who introduces the fix that the Supreme Court suggested. I mean, that's the pudding in which is the proof.
Yeah, I mean, as I've said, I'm pretty much 100% sure that he's full of crap and he is just saying that. But I mean, still, the mere fact that he uttered those words, he's going to get primary for that. I already know it. And it just, I mean, and maybe, just maybe, because I mean, back in 2006, they reauthorized the Voting Rights Act with a pretty solid majority in both the House and the Senate. It's like, maybe, just maybe, Congress might actually get off its butt finally and do something, but I'm not holding my breath.
No. No. That's the problem with the dysfunction in the Congress as it presently is constituted, Sergi. If, and this is, you know, one of those giant straight-up mountain face cliff ifs, if the House was to pass, I mean, the fix that the Supreme Court said the Congress is free to pass, well, if they did that, do you really think remember, there's a whole bunch of Republican members of the Senate who are members of the Senate today who were members of the Senate when it passed 98-0 back in 2006. Okay? One. That was a different time. I mean, I got some quotes here via the Rude Pundit. You ever read him?
Oh, yes. I first heard of him listening to the Stellar Show, you know, because he sometimes makes appearances on that show, and I follow him.
Well, he quoted today from Mitch McConnell, of all people. When the Voting Rights Act passed in 2006, Mitch McConnell said, "America's history is a story of ever-increasing freedom, hope, and opportunity for all. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 represents one of this country's greatest steps toward that story. Today, I am pleased the Senate reaffirmed that our country must continue its progress towards becoming a society in which every person of every background can realize the American dream. With the reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act, we are recommitting ourselves to that dream. Now.
Yertle said that?
Yep. At the same time, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, junior senator from Alabamistan, said, although the Voting Rights Act is now 40 years old, many of my constituents have vivid recollections of discrimination at the ballot box, and they have strong memories of the civil rights movement that led to the most historic changes that were encapsulated in the Voting Rights Act. These are wonderful people. They love America and are proud of the changes in Alabama and our nation. They have a strong attachment to the Voting Rights Act. All Alabamians want to see the progress continue in light of the wrongs that have occurred in the past and out of respect for those who place their very lives at risk for change. I will vote in favor of the Voting Rights Act.
My stars.
Yeah, I know.
It's amazing how these Republicans can change in less than a day.
Well, right. So do you think 7 years later you're going to get those same two speeches from those same two senators with that one in our White House?
Yep.
No. On the other hand, though, Sergey, and work with me here. I mean, don't just dismiss it out of hand. Consider this. Roger Taney Roberts may be the smartest Republican in Washington. I offer you two pieces of evidence. While he has been called a traitor for his holding in the Affordable Care Act case, we realize that what he really did was he let the profiteering for-profit insurance company part of the damn thing go through, while at the same time striking down the universal health care provision of it. That's pretty damned wily in my book.
And we're than a greased up pig.
Two, today, what if it just turned out that he provided, assuming that they're intelligent enough to pick up on it, what if he just provided the Republican Party a means by which to not become an irrelevant old party of cranky old white people going forward into their irrelevance? What if he provided a roadmap for the Republican majority in the House and the Republican minority in the Senate to at least get persons of color to consider voting for them? What if he did that, Sergey? Because, you know,
I know that this is, you know, quote unquote radio, internet radio. Yeah, I know that this is an audio only program, but if y'all could see me right now, yeah, my mouth is so wide open a spaceship could fly into it. You may actually be correct on that, Bobby.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it work that way?
I would not put it past.
I would never have even dreamed of saying that had you not brought forward the Eric Cantor revelation.
Bob, I believe that you may very well be correct, the Mundo, right there. You know, because speaking back to the Affordable Care Act, because I remember when you know, the day it happened, I was asleep, and I heard my, this was back before I broke the shackles Apple off of me, so I had an iPod Touch, and I heard the thing go, and I wake up, and I, you know, through sleepy eyes, I look at it was one of the local news stations there, it's like, Supreme Court upholds Affordable Care Act. I was like, something's fishy about that. So, I'm pretty sure something's fishy about this, too, and I believe that your theory, Bob, may actually very well has a pretty good chance of being correct, because you know, the Republicans have had, you know, because of their crap, have, in fact, I've only met one or two black people who've never voted for a Republican, and I've met thousands. So they may very well be trying to stop their irrelevance.
Well, but remember, and this is the truth, this is a historical truth. When black folks did start getting to vote, guess which party they voted for?
Oh, yeah, the Republican.
Because Lincoln freed the slaves. Now, could you see this as the 21st century manifestation of that?
Yes, I could.
If they're smart enough to pick up on it, if their intelligence can outweigh their bigotry and their pig-eyed stupidity, and their, if their intelligence can outweigh their bigotry and their pig-eyed hatefulness.
Well, I mean, you know, judging
now that's,
by Eric Cantor's quote, Eric Cantor may already have picked up on it, and if he has picked up on it, it's only a matter of time before he spreads it.
And see, that works double plus good for Eric Cantor, because if he comes up with the idea and John Boehner so much as shuffles a foot on it, well, in 2014, we may be saying Speaker Cantor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Boehner hasn't come out publicly, and neither has what's-his-face McConnell.
No. Yeah, welcome to Onionville. Layer after layer after layer after layer, Sergi.
I swear, Bob, I believe that you are correct. The more I'm thinking about it right now, this may be another one of John Roberts' little, I mean, he's slicker and greased up pig. He may very well have just handed the Republicans a chance to say, hey, we don't hate the blah people. Look, we get the rest of Voting Rights Act again.
And understand that if they do something like, if they do a rewrite of Section 4, it will be facially something they can do PR on, and substantively toothless, except for the fact that Section 5 still exists.
Toothless. What's the same I heard? Oh, yeah, you know, kind of like Eden Cellar, you know, it exists, but it doesn't really do you much good.
Yeah, empty food, no calories. Yeah, right, exactly. Hey, Sergi, it's good to hear from you, and thanks for pulling me down off the ledge. I appreciate it. I needed this.
Yeah, and if I just mention one final thing real quick, Bob.
Sure.
Andy, you know, I believe that he was out of line. I don't think he really needed to apologize for anything, Bob. You know, unreasonable is unreasonable.
Well, thank you. Thank you probably most of all for that, Sergi. I appreciate it.
You're trying to have a conversation, and, you know, it wasn't you that started yelling, you know. It's like, you have nothing to apologize for, Bob. Keep on fighting the good fight, and I hope this show stays on there for another 10, 20, 30 years.
Bless your heart, I do, too. It's my, it's not even a retirement plan. It's just something to do, you know, once we find out that Social Security's gone.
Have a good evening, Bob, as best as we can with the news.
All right. You take care, Sergi. Have a good night.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye now. From Fort Worth, that's Sergi. And I'm not kidding. I really do appreciate being talked out of the tree. Sometimes I need that. Note from Kate. Bob, you aren't the only one who's cried today. I've been in tears with a stomach ache since the beginning of the program. I'm so angry. The blood in the ground as it isn't the only thing crying. My heart's going out to the vet who lost his baby today. It isn't a wonder that we are all scratchy and irritable. We are on the cusp of something ominous. I feel at odds with folks who aren't recognizing the need to keep the funding going. I'm on the verge of making a challenge, placing bets on who'll be the last caller as the horn goes dark. God, I hate that. I hope that ain't the case, Kate. I hope it isn't. We'll just keep plugging and, I don't know, hope for the best. And mighty grateful for the help that does come in and has come in and came in so wonderfully last week. The problem is, it's an ongoing struggle. You pull one out of the hat and you pay it, and you pull them out of the hat till you can't pay anymore, and well, there you go. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Times have changed. and we've often around the clock when the Puritans got a shock when they landed on Plymouth Rock. If today is the tide they should try to stem, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock would land on them.
Well done, Jim.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows.
Anything goes.
Good authors who once knew better words now only use four letter words, writing prose. Now anything goes. Now good is bad today, black's white today, day's night today, but da da da. And those guys today that women prize today are simply gigolos. There it is.
There it is.
Cole Porter had it right a long time ago.
And I haven't, I've gone looking, but I haven't had a chance to find the other one you suggested, which was equally appropriate.
De Lovely?
No.
Which one is that?
No, what you wrote in over a couple of minutes ago.
Oh, it's right there.
Ethel Waters.
Oh, it's a beautiful song, and I dedicate that to Kate. You just pull it right up, it's right there on the screen. Or it's right there on YouTube. Just pull up Miss Otis Regrets, Ethel Waters.
And there it is.
A lovely lady who did a wonderful rendition of that song, a tribute to Cole Porter and a tribute to her own position in 1934.
Nicely covered by both Bette Midler and Brian Ferry.
I think Ethel Waters would be more appropriate this time, to tell you the truth.
Well, let's take a minute, Jim.
Okay.
Stand by.
She's unable to lunch today. Madam, Miss Aldous regrets she's unable to lunch today. She is sorry to be delayed, but last evening down in Lover's Lane she strayed. Miss Aldous regrets she's unable to lunch today. When she woke up and found that the dream of love was gone, madam, she ran to the man from under her velvet gown. She drew a gun and shot her lover down. Madam, Miss Otis regrets she's unable to lunch today. When the mob came and got her, dragged her from the jail. Madam, they strung her to the willow across the way. And the moment before she died, she lifted up her lovely head and cried.
My goodness gracious. Jim, I never realized until I was reading the notes to the song here. Listen to this list of the people who have recorded that song.
Oh, billions.
Matt, Ethel Waters.
Yeah.
First performed by Douglas Bing in Hi Diddle Diddle, which opened October 3rd, 1934 at the Savoy in London, but also recorded by Nat King Cole, Ethel Waters, Edith Piaf, Nancy Wilson, Jose Feliciano, Linda Ronstadt, Ella Fitzgerald, Christy McCall with the Pogues, the Mills Brothers, LaBelle, Bette Midler, John Barrowman, Josh White, Brian Ferry, the Pine Valley Cosmonauts, Shani Rigsby, Richard Manuel, the Lemonheads, and then it says, and others.
Well, it goes on and on and on. And some have done a great, great job with that. But I think Ethel Waters probably is my favorite of all. Because it was, you know, she sang it in the time in which Cole Porter was, you know, at the top of his game. 2 years before he had that horrible riding accident that really hurt him, but he still continued. Even though after a pharmacopoeia of pills and reservoirs of scotch, he still maintained until 1964. But that man had a lot of influence on people's attitudes and ideas and progress in the musical theater of his day.
Absolutely.
And still today remains my all-time hero. And as a matter of fact, I'm thumbing through the Cole Porter songbook, and I'm in contact with the place where he was born in Miami County.
Peru, Indiana, is it?
Peru for the older people, Peru for the younger ones, and, you know.
Kind of the way Cairo, the place in Illinois is Cairo, not Cairo.
Exactly. And he was born to privilege and wealth and stuff like that. But he left so much to help and entertain people and to just enable one to relax. And that's the reason I recommended the other night that film with Ashley Judd and Kevin Kline, DeLovely. And I have a lot of attachment to Cole Porter because of my mother and my father, who also loves him dearly.
Well, I'm going to find some time, Jim, and watch DeLovely with Agnes.
I think Agnes would love it. You might call it a chick flick, but it's a great film. It's well done. Kevin Kline is an accomplished actor.
Oh, yeah.
And so is Ashley Judd.
I would buy a ticket to watch Kevin Kline read the ingredient list off a toothpaste tube.
Right.
I mean, when you look at Kevin Kline's overall body of work, and on the one hand you've got the brilliant turn he did in Sophie's Choice.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you go to the other end of the spectrum with A Fish Called Wanda.
Well, you know.
Don't call me stupid.
Well, cannot a cat look at a king? You know, there it is. But I heard your exchange with the other gentleman, and, you know, these things happen. You know, people get a bit hot under the collar about different situations, and there it is, and there you have it. That's all I can say, quoting from Amadeus, as the Austrian emperor would used to say all the time, played by Jeffrey, whatever his name is. I can't remember the guy's name, but there it is, and there you have it. And as far as the Supreme Court ruling today is concerned, I thought that Miss Otis Regrets might be sort of appropriate in a way.
Yeah, with the Voting Rights Act in the role of Miss Otis.
Yeah, essentially. Such a thing has happened, and it's going to have to be reflected upon and enacted, and who knows where it's going to go. That's just the way it is, you know. That's the way politics are. The name of the game, a la Mr. Porter, God bless him wherever he is, is quite true today.
Indeed, Jim. Thank you very kindly.
That's the reason I like him so much, because in his day, he was such an iconoclast. and was such a brilliant lyricist. Sitting with his bottle of scotch, a rhyming dictionary, and a Steinway.
Oh, he didn't really cheat with a rhyming dictionary, did he?
Of course he did. That's one of the things he did.
Oh, see, now you're shattering illusions.
No. You got to have everybody's got to have some type of thing to get them through the night.
And sooner or later, you're going to end a line in Orange and wind up with real trouble.
Yeah, but nonetheless, he did. He did use the rhyming dictionary on occasion. But that does not under or belie his ability as an incredibly talented person who had a very, very good life initially. And then when he had that terrible horseback riding accident, and then, of course, when his wife, Linda Lee Porter, of the Virginia Lees, developed emphysema. And he was never the same after that, because after Linda died, that's when he finally stopped going through the surgeries and had the amputation of one leg. The man had a lot of courage in his own way. He really did. And, you know, since I missed his birthday on June 9th on this program, I thought I would just bring it in today to sort of maybe calm you down a little bit and take it in another way.
Oh, I'm calm, Jim. I'm more frustrated with myself than I am with the circumstances.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm never... I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you know, things like this happen. I mean, I've heard Andy get on your program, and he has launched into a lot of information. Good. I think he's very strongly willed, well-spoken, but I think he sort of defeats his own purpose sometimes when he gets into these things, when he incurs a conversation with someone who doesn't quite agree the way he does. Now, Andy, if you are offended by that, I'm real sorry. But that's just my impression of it. Of course, I've done the same thing.
Well, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God.
Well,
right?
I mean, you and I have gotten into it about how many things? Religion, whatever, like that. And you and I are diametrically opposed about that.
But we've also, it's taken a little bit of work, Jim, but we've...
Well, I've always spoken my mind, and you've spoken yours.
Yeah, but I don't recall you ever calling me a liar.
No, I'm too much of a gentleman to do that.
I think you are.
And by the way, since I've told you many tales about my dad, next July 12th, they are dedicating a very beautiful bench to him in front of the Camden Archives.
Oh, wonderful.
And I will not be able to be there because I am quite ill right now, but nonetheless, I have submitted my own effort that will be read in honor of both my father, who was the mayor of that town for so many years, and my mother, who helped found Camden Archives, in order that history might be kept alive, not for the sake of profit,
but for the sake of history.
And knowledge. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, we've lost a lot of people in generations in the past. I don't look forward to the generations that will come, and some of the generations that are sort of in charge at this point. But nonetheless, there it is, and there you have it. Again, you know, what can you do?
Indeed. Well, Jim, my best to your family next month. What a noble undertaking that is, that archive.
Oh, it is, absolutely. And it used to be a Carnegie Public Library, the only library in town when I grew up. And it was a place where I spent many, many wonderful afternoons with one of my mother's best friends, who was a librarian then. Miss Mary Boykin Rain, God bless her. And it was there that I became, you know, acquainted with books like Wonders of the Past, books on Egypt, all types of things. And that's what I would do after school as a boy and a fairly young man before going home. And if my mother wanted to find me, she knew where to call. She talked to Mary Helen or Mrs. Rain. And as I approach the twilight years of my life, I look back so fondly on those people who have such a good influence, even though, well, I sort of became a scamp, but now I've trimmed my lamp. But I still go back to those times. In deep South Carolina, in Camden, the oldest inland town. Just like you do with your own, you know, your own things, you know?
Yeah. It's like that, well, I don't know why I have it, but I've got that profound hankering to get south.
There's a lot there, Bob. Yeah. There's a lot more there than just teabaggers and ignorant people. There are a lot of cultured and extremely erudite people there. And the South has produced its share of contributions to our musical and literary heritage, our political heritage.
And that is precisely why Southerners such as myself, and I won't speak for you, but I suspect it's probably true, that is why we are so deeply conflicted. So much wickedness coupled with so much abiding good.
Well, you know, I think that Margaret Mitchell probably made the best contribution she ever could have to that certain portion of the history of the South, because her two main characters in there, Scarlet and Rhett, neither one of them wanted war. And I can still see in that film Rhett Butler, when he first makes it, or Clark Gable as Rhett Butler, and then he gets into it with those Southern gentlemen who were so filled with pride and arrogance, thinking
zeal and fervor.
Oh yeah, and he just says,
"Well, you know, in that instance, the Rhett Butler character in Margaret Mitchell's novel is a stand-in for the significant number of people, men, and some women, who said this is the most damned fool enterprise we have ever undertaken."
Oh, it definitely was. And the trouble is, we're still undertaking it today.
And we got an object lesson in that from Roger Tawney Roberts today.
Well, he is a very shrewd critter.
Oh, you know what?
And he's pushed the right of judicial review right to the very limit.
Absolutely. And that's what he's going to spend his legacy doing, or spend his tenure on the court doing, is seeing how far he can push it before it completely collapses.
I don't know if it's that going to be that bad or not. I mean, you know, the guy can only live so long, and, you know, let's face it.
But the thing is, he was, you know, when he was appointed to the court, there is a reasonable expectation that he will sit as Chief Justice of that court for a time period that will challenge that of John Marshall. He was deliberately chosen for that purpose.
Oh, absolutely. He's a young man.
He may well be Chief Justice into his 90s.
I doubt it. I doubt it. It's just amazing how fate intervenes in situations like that. I don't think he's going to be there till his 90s.
Fate and the occasional crosstown bus, but I don't think he has to cross streets on his own.
Well, no. I don't think so. I guess he's probably collected by a limousine that takes him home or whatever. I don't know what they do in the Supreme Court. Hell, it was just a building I used to pass by on First Avenue and look and just wondered exactly why I always had to put my sunglasses on when I did, because they gleamed so white, you know?
Yeah. Of course, now it's got that big poster up in front of it till God
knows. Well, you know, they got to have a little window dressing. I mean, doesn't everything have to have a little window dressing these days? I mean, we've seen so much window dressing and this, that, and the other.
Well, you know, there's a scaffold all the way to the top of the Washington Monument right now.
Yeah, knew that too. knew that too. And
I'll be headed back there second week of July for rather a long stint.
How is that going?
It's going well. We're adding co-sponsors, and we're going to spend the month of July just laser beam focused on a project, and hopefully see some results come of it.
Well,
I understand that using that verb, I'm playing with fire, but I hope, with a reasonable hope, that we shall see the introduction of the bill in the Senate before Christmas.
Well, you know, I wish you all the best until hope against hope becomes hope abandoned, and I hope that will not happen. But you might want to think of yourself as a citizen of Leningrad during World War II. They had it pretty rough then, you know?
Yep, very.
3,000 people dying each day of hunger. But guess who won? And
yep.
Guess who was, and guess, you know, and what is Leningrad today? The Venice of the North, the Babylon of the Snows. The most beautiful city in Europe today. And I will throw that against Paris or any other town.
Well, I would love to see it just for the sake of the comparison.
Well, anyway, you take care. I'm going to leave you where I found you, and if you can ever pull up any coal porter or whatever that can put you in a better mood or whatever, or a more somber mood or a more emotional mood, depending on relationships and things of that nature, I can't think of a better place to go.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Good night, sir.
Good night. Earl Buddy Jim. 9 minutes before the hour, I'm going to get one more phone call in, but I want to get a couple of things out there. Jay writing in, speaking of the next generation, as Jim did, Jay says, how about our Cassie deciding to go to law school? I think it's a fine and good thing. For someone whose studies have encompassed the things that Cassie's has, it must be understood that law school is not just about lawyering. It is the ultimate culmination of a course of learning in the liberal arts, because the law touches all things, and thus it rewards people of a broad ability to climb steep learning curves. Share a remark with you that came from my old buddy Paul. We go back a long way. He wrote over on Facebook, bad week for people of color. Paula Deen and SCOTUS, from insult to injury in one news cycle. I love America. I hate Americans. I am ever more certain that God bless the land, not the people. One day, people will live here who merit that blessing. One hopes. Meanwhile, I've got to get this in because it dovetails with the ongoing drama in the Texas legislature, where they've just spent an hour arguing over whether, well, let's see, Wendy Davis, who has filibustered the whole live long day, and, you know, note to those people who thought Rand Paul did something heroic with his phony baloney drone filibuster, you know, note to Code Pink, go have a look at what Wendy Davis has done today. That is a filibuster. And she didn't even do it in expectation of flowers and chocolate. She has stood there heroically, Alamo-like, if we can dare use that reference, against the hordes of fetus-fetishizing Republicans, and was called down for mentioning Roe versus Wade because it was deemed not germane. On the other hand, the damn fool Republicans in the Texas Senate spent an hour arguing over whether it was improper for someone to hand her a back brace. Because, note to Rand Paul, pissant, real filibusters are hard work, Buster. So I got a note from Chris in California. This morning in the car, he says, I found myself yelling with no convenient means to muffle it. I was listening to that trifecta of horror in regards to female reproductive rights and gender identity that you laid out on the program that really so clearly demonstrates how far, far away certain parts of the population, i.e. vast hordes of men, are from getting a handle on their own sexuality. It seems to me that sexism is less obvious to the public at large because racism comes and goes historically, usually used to justify discrimination or institutions, whereas male domination has been part and parcel of Western civilization for thousands of years. It is buried deeper than racism, which is why, when it bubbles up like this, it looks especially Saurian. I like the principle of equality because mentally it makes my life much, much easier. I don't have to waste time or energy subdividing people by anything whatsoever. We're all supposed to be the same and get equal treatment under the law. Done. Over. I can go think about something else. I know in practice that's hardly the case, but in my mind, we're striving for simplicity. So I do my best to avoid sexism and racism in my thoughts and speech, although I'm sure some of the programming gets to me from time to time. I try to be cognizant of it. But there are some people for whom maintaining these divisions is crucial to their own sense of identity. You see this phenomenon with religion. I'm saved, you're going to hell. Sexuality, I'm a man, you're a woman, or gay, these are closely related. And race, I'm white, you're not. Let's examine the I'm a man, you're not idea briefly. The prevailing male ethos in America is defined by its non-femininity. If a man exhibits supposedly feminine characteristics, he is not a member of team male and should be ostracized. Even without bringing homosexuality into it, this explains much bullying of nerds and the like. But bigotry against homosexuals is the ultimate crystallization of this. Do you suppose it would be possible that a man who so loathes these feminine characteristics in men is not also a chauvinist to the core? All these troglodytes who must keep a woman in a burqa so as not to provoke a sexual assault are the weakest, most feeble excuses for men that I know. How dare you attempt to slut-shame women when by your own admission in religious law you can't see an ankle without thoughts of rape entering your mind? It is so hypocritical, it practically makes my head explode. Bob, get me a Thorazine dart, please, 30 cc's, if you don't mind, right in the neck. In my mind, rule number one is if you want to call yourself a man, you keep it in your pants. End of story. If you don't, you fail as a man. That's more important than all the football ability, all the praising Jesus, all the financial success in the world. Because otherwise, you took a look at civilization and decided that it just wasn't for you. We need to come down like a ton of bricks on every rapist and heap shame to those that deserve it for once. We need to change the culture and we need to ease the antediluvian clawed grip of patriarchy on this planet. We no longer have a luxury of building bigger and bigger clubs to hit each other over the head with. If you refuse to acknowledge the gigantic potential of over half the planet and define them entirely by their reproductive organs, then your society is doomed from its inception. Better luck on the next pass. Maybe the dolphin people will get it right in the year 6 million CE. As a lifelong admirer of many strong and passionate women, including my own mother and girlfriend, it brings me such pain to see these lizard people still stumbling about the Pleistocene. But to the extent that we can all be allies and advocates for the women in our lives and tirelessly insist on their rights to be human beings first and foremost, we can still fight back against this garbage. Thanks for covering all of this grisly stuff, Bob. We need to stay sharp. And a huge thanks to all the Horn family members who've been contributing to keep this program going. Just like Bob says, it is truly inspiring to see your determination to keep this important conversation alive and well. Signed, Chris in California. Thank you, Chris. That's only about a million times more eloquent than ever I will be. Just a few seconds left. Hey, welcome to the program.
This is Edward again.
Oh, hey.
Yes, being a librarian for 50 years, I have a book to recommend to you.
Yes.
It's called A Slap in the Face, Why Insults Hurt and Why They Shouldn't by William B. Irvine. And this one little quote here, Robert Benchley was coming out of the Algonquin Hotel. And of course, he was a member of the Algonquin Roundtable. And he saw this man in a uniform, and he walks up to the man and says, "Get me a cab." And the man says, "Sir, I'm an admiral." And Benchley says, "Well, then get me a battleship."
That's precious.
I love things like that.
Oh, I do too. Edward, thank you. I needed the giggle at the end of the program.
Well, good. I wanted to give you one.
And you succeeded. Bye now.
Bye.
Out of here. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. And to those who have listened to the podcast and not live, again, I apologize for my tawdry behavior. Y'all have a good night.